was a Kennedy, I'd be a black Kennedy. Black car, black tux, this is black symmetry. Raised in a shot on my family from Tennessee. I remember me, Reem Dilla, we was in the D.
Riding through the city with the top down. We ain't got no ceilings to our thoughts now. It's a beautiful ride. Riding through the city with the top down. We ain't got no ceilings to our thoughts now. It's a beautiful ride.
It's Saturday morning. We hop in the car. Mom's heading to work. And I'm geeked to go spend the day at the shop. I'm always the first one here. The lights shine bright and the energy runs high. It's about to go down on a Saturday morning at the shop. The shop is our sound booth. Barbers blast their favorite beats. Folks bob their heads to the rhythm. Everybody's feeling the vibe on a Saturday morning at the shop. The shop is our gallery. Legends look down from the walls. So much history, so many heroes. Giving me hope on a Saturday morning at the shop. The shop is our sports show. Highlights flash, barbers cheer. It's game day on a Saturday morning at the shop.
Riding through the city with the top down. We ain't got no ceilings to our thoughts now. It's a beautiful ride.
Good morning. That was author Keenan Jones reading from his new book, Saturday Morning at the Shop. Welcome to the April edition of Black Book Talk. This is Patricia Welch, librarian emeritus. Obviously, it was time for me to retire. Okay. And with me are
Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman.
Okay. And again, our esteemed guest, Keenan Jones. If you could see this book, you would see why I say it. This is a beautiful book. But Keenan, tell us a little bit more about the book. You set the stage with the reading.
Yeah, so the book was, created in a time in, our country where, we were witnessing a lot of police violence against Black males. I grew up in Indiana and Illinois, but relocated late in my 10 years to the Twin Cities. And during 2020, obviously the George Floyd murder not only shocked the state and the country, but the world. And teaching elementary school at the time, the pandemic happened. And I just saw a lot of young Black boys and males just feeling down about themselves. And, I kind of said to myself, what can I do to uplift Black folks, Black men and boys? Not the protester type to be out there on the front lines. And so, I've always had this passion for writing. And so I started coming up with different book ideas. Did I want to go the social justice route? Did I want to go the sports route? And then the barbershops were closed. And so, things were getting kind of rough on me with my hair and my beard and mustache and all of that. And, they released some of the restrictions. The barbershops opened back up. I went on a Saturday morning, and it was jam-packed. Like I remembered it before the pandemic, but just like that human connection, being with brothers of all ages, folks from the community, I sat in a chair and I was like, this is it. I gotta write this book about the barbershop. And just not only showing the joy of a barbershop is my favorite space, but just how important it is to the Black community. How important it is to Black men and boys.
Absolutely.
And we're glad you did. Beautiful book. The illustrations are beautiful. It kind of, just the way the colors are, and kind of dreamy, the way it is in a memory when you think back over something.
Yeah, I agree. Ken is an amazing. If y'all don't know who Ken Daly is, and maybe you know who Ken Daly is, but Ken Daly, I feel like is a rising star illustrator with Afro-Caribbean roots, hailing from Canada. But yeah, it's just kind of like, a lot of people say like it's nostalgia when they're reading a book. It brings back a lot of the memories from when they were children, or just being in the barbershop and things of that nature, right? And the colors. are very vibrant. So I really feel like, you know, I provided the words, but Ken really put his stamp down with the illustrations in the book.
He absolutely did. It was beautiful. And he's done some other books. And I'm sure he just sells his work just independently. It's just gorgeous. I'm curious. This is your first book. It's a children's book. And you, I think, have the most enviable introduction of any new author that I've seen. You are being published by Beach Lane Books, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster, major publisher. I heard about you on CBS Mornings. I guess Gayle King was there, but I'll just say major national exposure. We have a lot of authors or would-be authors in our listenership. So tell us a little bit about how this wonderful thing came about.
Well, you know, it seems like it happened overnight, but it really didn't. You know, it's been a decade worth of just trying to figure out how to write a book. You know, obviously I'm a teacher by trade. That's my day job. And teaching elementary schools and teaching English, you know, I've always been fascinated with reading and writing, even when I was young. And, you know, the rejection, I feel like I started writing again about 10 years ago and just blindly throwing my book out to different agents and publishing companies and getting rejected and, you know, just continuously trying to refine my craft. And then, you know, I'm kind of a go-getter though. So, you know, I knew that I didn't want to go the self-publishing route. And I also know, you know, how difficult it is to be picked up by a major publisher. But, you know, I just think like believing in yourself, telling yourself that you're a writer and not stressing out over like, when it's going to happen, just continuously getting better and learning the industry. And so in the Twin Cities, we have a very incredible nonprofit literary organization called The Loft. And again, like I was saying, I'm a go-getter. And mm-hmm. so I found out about this fellowship opportunity for Black writers. So I applied for the fellowship. I got the fellowship. This was around 2021, I should say. And I started learning through this fellowship from different, you know, they had Penguin Random House come in, HarperCollins, giving us insight on how to kind of crack the industry and giving us little tricks of the trade, how to, you know, write the right query letter, and how to get into these agencies. And so I started researching all agencies across the country that specialize in, you know, multicultural Black books.
Right.
And I think it was about 100 of them. And so I kept a spreadsheet and I just like, you know what, I'm just going to be shipping this barbershop manuscript out to any and everybody. And so I kind of scaled it out. I'm going to do 10 this week, 10 the next week, 10 the next week, 10 the next week, you know, and then after I said 2-3 months, I started hearing back from people, rejection, rejection, maybe, rejection, 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 maybe I'm full, rejection, rejection. And then it just like that, I had, you know, KT Literary out of Colorado. They just said, hey, we love this. We love to represent you. Can you hop on a call the next day? And, you know, I didn't think it was real, you know, like after going through all the rejection. And then, you know, it got into the right hands. I got into the right agency that knew people. So the connection piece helps once you get that agent.
Yes.
And, you know, I think after, you know, submitting the manuscript to the Big Five, you know, I think I, you know, after about a week, I heard from Scholastic, HarperCollins,
a couple
mid-level publishing companies, and then, you know, Beach Lane, Simon & Schuster, you know, they kind of came in last, but, you know, they came with the best offer and, but not only the best offer, but just like a lot of people wanted me to change it. Right.
Oh
yeah. And so Beach Lane was like, nah, we like it as it is. We like, you know, poetic sounding, picture books. Musicality is a big piece as well. And so, you know, then our, you know, the rhyming thing, you know, some people wanted me to go to the rhyme scheme but it changed up, right? I wanted to be, you know, I'm a child of hip hop, spoken word. Mm-hmm. So I wanted it to come out that way. And so, you know, it just got into the right hands. And, you know, I feel like God had a lot to do with that. Just making sure I had this opportunity and us out in the world.
It sounds like it, because I what was interesting to me in listening to you is that people need to understand writing the book is just one part of it. That's the beginning. There's so much more afterwards, and that this is a business and you have to take a business-like approach. So, you know, congratulations. Yeah, I can see it was a long walk, but you did everything right.
I'm glad you got to leave it like you wrote it. I get my hair done at a beauty shop, but in the same building on the other side is a barbershop. Mm-hmm. So the people in the barbershop, when it gets kind of quiet over in the beauty shop part, that at a certain time of the day, there's music. And people sometimes trying to sing along with the music, even depending on their age.
Yep.
That's such a great part of being at a beauty shop or a barber shop, is the voices and the music.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because right now, the barber shop I go to, it's owned by a brother and sister, co-owned, and the barber shop is in the front. And the beauty shop is in the back. So, you know, I go get my hair cut. My mama and my daughters is in the back in the beauty shop. And it is a little quieter on the beauty shop side, you know. They still talking, chopping it up, you know. But then on the barbershop side, you know, somebody might be going back and forth arguing about sports or politics or something like that. So I know exactly what you mean.
That must be a thing. I was thinking about Geneva's, Paul Knoll's wife's place. She had the beauty shop in the back. He had the barber shop. And where I live now, right down the street, there's a woman. They're all women barbers, but they're up front. And then there's the beauty shop in the back. So yeah, I think that's a thing. Tell me, who is this book directed at? Because as I was looking at the illustrations and just thinking about barbershops, I mean, everybody from, you know, three-year-olds getting their first cut to senior citizens who are coming in, maybe, I don't know, to get a shave and also to just be in the mix. Who were you thinking of when you were writing this book? Who did you want to know about it?
Well, you know, it's crazy that when I wrote the book, you know, obviously thinking about young Black boys was at the front of my mind and having that representation. But I started thinking about all of the Black men in my life who had an impact that maybe I touched base with in the barbershop and through sports. And so I started thinking about, you know, my friends. I started thinking about my dad, all my uncles, my coaches, the neighborhood police officers. You know, my grandfather was a politician in Gary, Indiana in the 70s and 80s. I started thinking about him and all of his friends. And all of those strong Black men, or even the barbers, the young barbers, who just did everything that they could to try to give me gems on life and keep me grounded as I touch into that space. And so, you know, as I was going through character lists of who I wanted to be in the book, I had a character list for young men. I had a character list for teenagers. I had a character list for Black males in their 20s. I had a character list for the elders of the community. And just all these memories started to come out of, you know, those folks and how they gripped their hands around me, not only in the barbershop, but just, you know, on the block, on the basketball court, in school, etc. So that's why you see this wide range of folks in the book.
Yep, representation is everything. My grandson, Isaiah, who's 31 now, when he was a teenager, he worked after school sweeping up. His job was to set up the chessboard or the checkerboard when he got there. and to encourage people to play. And he was encouraged to play checkers or chess, whatever people wanted to play. And that was a great first job for him.
No, absolutely. And it's funny you say that too about the checkerboards and chess boards. You know, on one of the last pages, you can see a table of everybody in the shop, all the men, and the older man teaching the young boys how to play dominoes. But what's funny is, like, in our new generation, we kind of, in some of the shops that I went to, we kind of replaced, and that still goes on in a lot of places, right? But now we got video games. So somebody might have an Xbox in the back and the guys is playing 2K and Madden, but, you know, just playing games in general. But, you know, it shifts a little bit with this new generation. But I still see the chess boards and the checkerboards, all of that stuff, depending on where you are in the country, you know, that's still going on.
And also, I think the conversations, that's, I mean, because I don't think barbershops are that different from beauty shops and that, but also, you know, a lot of women who wear their hair naturally, they go to barbershops.
Yeah,
so we're sitting there too, adding our opinion. You know, when people come by and want to know what you want to eat, we're putting our orders in. So, yeah. You know, so I hope that will not be lost.
And, you know, now, especially, you know, in the Twin Cities, the barbers, I know there's a collection of barbers who are, you know, they're being trained. It's like mental health advocates now. And so being able to understand how to listen to folks and guide people on their journey, I think is important. So they're kind of being trained in that as well, which is important to the conversation piece because, you know, a lot of times we sitting in a chair, you know, the question might be, what's going on with you? And, you know, that's an opportunity for you to, you know, talk about the things that are going on in life and trying to get some wisdom and figure things out, especially as Black men in America right now. You know, we need those outlets to be able to talk to people and express how we feel. And the barbershop is such a safe space for that.
Yeah, safe space in that. When I first opened the book and the mother's carrying the son in the car, I thought he was going to her shop. But the book, I thought maybe she was a barber or a beautician. But as I read on, I realized, no, this is a safe place. You can leave your child at the barbershop and go and do something else.
Absolutely. You know, me and my mama spent a lot of time in the car driving around everywhere. And, you know, if my dad was at work and she needed to do her thing, you know, I was being dropped off at the barbershop, auntie house, neighbor's house. You know, just that whole community aspect was important in raising me. So, but we spent a lot of time in the car together.
You know, we were talking about the illustrations, and I love seeing the illustrations of the pictures on the wall, and just that is another way of teaching history. So could you talk about why you chose that?
Yeah, well, you know, it depends on what shop. You know, a lot of times you go into the shop and they might have, you know, some representation. Maybe it's a famous person who stepped foot in the shop, or maybe it's just a representation of somebody that was a leader, you know, just to try to inspire folks. But, you know, I wanted to take it a little step further. And, you know, I was intentional on looking at this as like a Black history lesson for the young kids and the folks that I learned about in elementary school, middle school, high school, and as an adult, and their influences on me. And, you know, there's a couple of hip hop figures in there with Tupac and Notorious Big, who I feel like were very influential in shaping the course of hip hop. And it's kind of cool going into schools and just hearing kids get excited. Oh, that's Tupac. He got Tupac in there. It's Tupac. Or, you know, oh, that's Martin Luther King. That's Martin Luther King. You know, the Frederick Douglass one, I gotta explain that one. That's a little deep. But they're able to actually call out some of them. So that I put that in there as well because I want young, not only young Black kids, But, you know, there's a lot of kids, you know, I teach in a diverse district, white kids who don't know who these folks are. So then there's lessons in that as well as we're reading the book. But most importantly, just trying to show that, you know, there's hope for us, our culture, young Black boys, young Black girls, that we can be anything we put our minds to. And we've endured so much, and we continue to rise. So that's kind of was the message I wanted to get across in those photos.
I'm wondering, are you working on another project?
Yes, I am working on another project. I'll try to be closed-lipped as much as I can, but there's a second coming of this particular style of book coming up. We're working on it right now, and I'll probably be having some announcements soon about some things. So, but yeah, I'm sticking with the community thing, and definitely sticking with uplifting young Black boys and showing that representation. So yeah, we got some things cooking right now, and I can't wait to make the announcement on the next one.
Well, tell us about something that's in existence now. You have a foundation, right?
Yes. You know, I started so as I was writing this book, I also decided to start a nonprofit foundation for young Black boys. You know, I obviously there's efforts around the country. You know, for instance, you know, Oakland, you know, they have their African American Male Achievement Program. My Brother's Keepers, which was developed through the Obama Foundation. But, you know, there's not as much as there needs to be. And so I saw a need in the Twin Cities to develop a nonprofit for young boys that was centered around literacy. I talked to a lot of experts across the country, names like Dr. Alfred Tatum, who is a leading Black scholar in literacy. He gave me some nuggets. I talked to some folks from the Obama Foundation and the My Brother's Keeper organization who gave me nuggets and just some research as to the importance of even having a safe space for young Black boys and males. And so, you know, I'm still early in the nonprofit stage, and it's challenging, but I've been able to really have an impact on a lot of young men across the Twin Cities, and not just, you know, single parent young Black boys, parents from the Black boys who have both parents, right? Being a Black male and a Black boy in America is not easy. And having that guidance and an organization to be able to help those young folks, I've been seeing some really positive results for that. So, you know, I'm still early in the process. Nonprofit work is hard, but I'm continuing to push forward because I know I'm making an impact. And I'm hearing from the community that I'm making an impact as well. So,
are you going on tour with this book?
Good. Yes, I am. I am going on tour with the book. I'll say that I'm going to be announcing some things next week, but I'll be hitting the Midwest. I'll be hitting the Great Lakes region. So I'll be going back home to the Chicago area at a couple places in Chicago. I'll also be in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And then this summer in June, I'll be headed to Toronto to do some things with Ken Daly, since, you know, he's loved in Canada. So I'll be hitting Canada this summer as well. And hopefully that'll be the start of me being able to get elsewhere around the country, since I've been receiving so much support and love from around the country. It's amazing how books just unite people from all over different cultures and different walks of life. So, you know, that's the start of me kind of getting out in the world, and I hope to. So if you know any folks out there in Portland, I'm ready to come out that way.
Okay, well, we'll send you some information on that. Unfortunately, we have come to the end of this great interview. Whenever you're able to reveal whatever is coming next, of course, you need to let us know so we can schedule you to come back and talk about that. But for today, thank you. One, thank you for writing the book. Thank you for joining us. And we wish you nothing but continued success.
I appreciate it so much. I'm I'm just so happy to be able to speak on your network and, you know, all the work that you all are doing to just uplift Black authors. You know, we got to stick together in these times and just keep pushing forward.
Absolutely. Folks, this is the end of the April edition of Black Book Talk, but we are looking forward to talking to you again in May. So good reading to you.
We'll see you next month.
Riding through the city with the top down. We ain't got no ceilings to our thoughts now. It's a beautiful ride.
Let the sun grow. I rode through the jungle on the humble. Got compassion from my mother, streets from my uncle. One code of honor is to move with no drama. Know thyself, no getting money, no karma. Hold respect like the charm that I got from my mama. In the palm of my hand, it's like a land that I'm fond of. A calm dove, line love, the black Dalai Lama of. Feed the masses with two fists for one love. The sum of all pieces. Release new releases to release us from the beasts. The thesis I used to get my little cuss cliques. It's what I used to get my grandmother pieces. She loved sequins. Diane Carroll like. Some of these leaders are feral like. Let the people go so they can face the east and grow. Time for everything. Everything is seasonal. I dreamed enough. Everything is believable. It's feasible. If I was a Kennedy, I'd be a black Kennedy. Black car, black tux. This is black symmetry. Raised in the shadow. My family from Tennessee. I remember me, Reem Dilla, we was in the D.
Riding through the city with the top down. We ain't got no ceilings to our thoughts now. It's a beautiful ride. Riding through the city with the top down. We ain't got no ceilings to our thoughts now. It's a beautiful ride.
Macaroons, easy afternoons, shorties, buckshots. Under blacker moons, in search of yellow suns. Undeveloped ones, they get hella guns. Heat and melanin, the streets where we from. Beats heavy drums, wish I could put Jordans on the feet of everyone. Black Kennedy, royalty with black identity. Leader of the freestyle, I go to penitentiaries. And write with the fight of Reverend Wright from Trinity. For centuries, they'll remember me for my similes. But I metaphor more than that. No matter how rich I get, I'ma pour it back. The jurisdiction of justice, nonfiction of a hustler's heart. From dust we start and we must embark to pass and mark the people. Had our first black prayers, I'ma be the sequel. If I was a Kennedy, I'd be a black Kennedy. Black car, black tux, this is black symmetry. Raised in the shadow, my family from Tennessee. I remember me, Reem Dilla, we was in the D.
Riding through the city with the top down. We ain't got no ceilings to our thoughts now. It's a beautiful ride. Riding through the city with the top down. We ain't got no ceilings to our thoughts now. It's a beautiful ride.